Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor at Managed Healthcare Executive. Today, I have the pleasure of meeting and speaking with Dr. Sheldon Fields, Associate Dean for Equity and Research, who's also a professor at Penn State University. So in today's conversation, in celebration of Black History Month, we will mainly be discussing racial equity in healthcare and what is being done for patients and nurses of color toward the improvement of the racial and health disparities that take place in care. So thank you, Sheldon, for joining me today.
It's my absolute pleasure.
Great to have you. So first, can you just tell our listeners, you know, a bit about yourself, maybe a bit more about the position as Associate Dean and Professor, at Penn State?
Mm-hmm. So sure, I assumed the position of Associate Dean for Equity and Inclusion and a research professor in the College of Nursing at Penn State University this past year. I also currently serve as the first vice president for the National Black Nurses Association. So I am a nurse. I've been a nurse for 30 years. I've been a family nurse practitioner for all of that time as well. So I am a researcher, a professor, an entrepreneur. I wear many, many hats. My research has been in healthcare disparities, with an emphasis and a focus on HIV prevention. That is what I've been doing also for many, many years, and been addressing those issues through the various platforms that I've been able to have leadership positions in.
Wonderful. You are a very busy man.
Yes, I am.
But that's good. That's a very good thing. So just to talk about mainly the foundation of this conversation, can you first just tell me, what is the role of racial equity in healthcare for patients and possibly for healthcare workers?
So when it comes to the whole issue of racial equity, and particularly in healthcare, you know, it's directly related to the fact that we live in a country that spends the most per capita for healthcare, but not everybody has equal access to that healthcare, and not everyone, when they even have access, has the same outcomes in terms of being beneficiaries of that healthcare. And that's for a lot of reasons. You know, the historic landmark Institute of Medicine study talked about unequal treatment that laid it out very clearly that even when everything else is equal, including the ability to pay and having health insurance, people of color, brown and black people in America have worse healthcare outcomes. And they point to this being a couple of reasons. The unchecked unconscious bias of healthcare workers, the lack of diversity amongst healthcare providers, the structural inequities in our healthcare system, and even the long-term atrocities that in the mistrust that has been earned by our healthcare system by the historical mistreatment of people in brown and black communities.
Great, thank you. I know you're a member of the National Black Nurses Association.
Yes.
So can you tell our listeners about the organization and what it does specifically, as I said, for, you know, African-American registered nurses or anyone in the healthcare field? Mm-hmm. So maybe about that organization and, you know, why this organization is so important when healthcare faces, you know, many of these inequalities right now.
Absolutely. The National Black Nurses Association was founded in the early 70s. This year, as you can tell by the logo behind behind me, we will celebrate our 50th anniversary. And we're really excited about that. And the mission and vision of MBNA, as we affectionately refer to it, is, you know, it is really a professional organization for all nurses of color, students, RNs, LPNs, student nurses, retirees, and anyone else who supports our mission and vision as allies to really work towards the betterment of health for historically underserved Black and Brown communities. And it really needed to come into fruition because even though we were all nurses, Black nurses were not allowed at one point to become members of the American Nursing Association. And even when we were giving access, you know, that access wasn't equal and it didn't really serve the needs of the people in the communities to which we live, work, and play. So we needed to form our own organization. The organization is truly the voice of the Black nurse in America. And we speak to everything from supporting the professional development of our members, a great deal of community outreach across 130 plus chapters in 35 states. We're a very large organization. We also support the next generation in terms of our mentorship program, our scholarships that we provide for the education of the next generation, our political advocacy, as in what we're doing tomorrow. It's the 33rd annual Nurses Day on the Hill, where we take our legislative agenda to our representatives. This year, we're focusing on the impact of COVID-19 and the long-term systemic effects of racial injustice and health and the need to increase what everything that we're doing around health equity. So that's MBNA in a nutshell. And I think you can see, and I hope your audience can see, just how important an organization like ours is.
Definitely. Thank you for that. Now, next, I wanted to know, which I actually just found this a little bit earlier in research, can you explain the Nurses You Should Know LinkedIn campaign and how this will educate others, you know, for specifically on the subject of nurses of color?
Yeah, so if you look at the history of nursing and you think about how it's been told, it has been told from a white Eurocentric perspective that begins and that starts, begins, and almost ends with the foretelling of people like Florence Nightingale and mainly Caucasian nurses. There's very little told about the vast impact and the accomplishments of Brown and Black nurses and other nurses of color. Mary Seacole fought right alongside, you know, Florence Nightingale in the Crimea War, but she's never mentioned. You know, Mary E. Mahoney, who was the first professionally trained nurse, Black nurse in America, no one really knows who she is, but you know about, you know, Clara Barton, and you know, the Nurses You Should Know project is a coalition to really dig deeper, to get to the whole truth about the those who have contributed to the nursing profession. You know, nursing is the largest of all healthcare professions and we are the most trusted, but our history is a little one-sided. So the initiative was put up, it launched on Monday, February the 1st, to start with Black History Month. So this month we will feature a lot of Black and African-American nurses. Today, we're gonna feature the all of the past presidents of the National Black Nurses Association with their profiles. And later on, we're going to be adding clips of current day leaders who will talk about their journey into professional nursing. And this has now become a year-long project, working with the partners through things like the National Ethnic Minority, the National Coalition for Ethnic Minority Nursing Associations.
Oh.
yes, We are also going to feature nurses from, you know, the National Association of Hispanic Nurses, Ananina, the National Association of Indigenous and Native American Nurses, the Filipino nurses, the Asian and Pacific Islander nurses. And it just really is, again, elevating those stories and giving everybody their just due who has contributed to the nursing profession, and really to get away from that all too often only white Eurocentric perspective on who is and what is nursing.
Wonderful, thank you. And yeah, like you said, so it's gonna be more of a nurses who just have made a difference, you know, mm-hmm. you know, specifically of color, at least starting this month. Just, you know, not even today, but in history's time, which is absolutely wonderful. So, you know, everyone's getting that full-on education, which is wonderful. Now, if people want to watch some of these or be a part of this campaign, is it like a free link they have to register to, or?
Nope, it's a free website. Just like you said, you found it, Nurses You Should Know. I believe if you throw it into a Google chat, we should come up.
Good, well, that's nice and easy, good. Thank you. Now, for the next question, I also heard that President Biden has recently signed the executive order to provide financial relief to Black Americans due to the effects of COVID. Mm-hmm. So can you explain what this will do for patients of color and those in underserved communities?
So we knew from the very beginning that mm-hmm. the COVID-19 pandemic disproportionately impacted those in brown, Black, and other communities. Mm-hmm. We knew that. From the higher rates of infection to the higher death rates. And one thing that it really had to do with was the larger proportion within those communities of essential workers. When white America got to stay home with their corporate jobs and be able to work from home, a lot of people, brown and Black, who were working, you know, for the most part, a lot of times, even low wage or minimum wage jobs had to go to work. So they were at increased risk. You know, we also know that the overlap in the increased populations where, for instance, where Black populations are, like in the South, and in those states that didn't expand the availability of, like, you know, Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act. So you had this double whammy, if you will, about lack of access to healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these communities have a tradition of living in intergenerational homes. So they live closer together where, you know, three or four generations might live in the same home. So you had elders in the home. And we also know that elders, you know, those who are 65 and older, you know, we're always at a greater risk for COVID. And then you have the, you know, inability to socially distance, you know, on public transportation. You know, if you got to take a bus or a train to work, you know, you can't socially distance on that. Anyone who's been on a New York City subway knows there is no social distancing on a New York City subway or a bus.
Right.
I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised. I can tell you, I don't remember. There's no such thing as personal space.
Right. No.
So these, all of these things put you know, the cities like you know, New York and Chicago and New Orleans, at greater risk, where we saw, you know, death rates, you know, 2 to 3 times higher than the white population from COVID in those Black and brown communities. The relief bill, and even what the Biden-Harris administration has done in standing up a responsive COVID-19 response team mm-hmm. is really going to make a difference. You know, I know they're arguing about a lot of things in this country at the moment, but the relief for this pandemic should not be one of them. You know, people are dying and they continue to die. You know, we're at what, 20, almost 25 million plus infected, right. Almost 450,000 are dead. This is way past due. Right. And, you know, and the truth is that the former administration just simply did not get it done.
Got it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Now, the next question kind of relates, what should health agencies, what should they be doing differently in for these particular communities, you know, of mm-hmm. color or underserved communities?
So, you know, we often repeat the same problems, the same issues in public health. Mm-hmm. And we know what really needs to be done.
Right.
We need to center services in those communities and trusted institutions. So, you know, I love the idea that they think that we're going to use pharmacies to distribute, you know, the COVID-19 vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Do you know in a lot of brown and black communities, there is no CVS, there is no Walgreens, but you know what there is? A church, a trusted church with a big, big parking lot where you can set up a social distance appropriate vaccination site.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have community rooms that you can also use. So while that alone will increase, how do you get vaccinations to these disproportionately impacted communities in a true partnership? And they can do it by working through, you know, things like NBNA and other ethnic minority nursing groups, because guess what? We have chapters in most of those cities and we have a workforce that we can tap into. Because also I would recommend that you send white healthcare workers into those communities. They're not gonna be as effective. And we have research to prove that. You know, due to that historical mistrust and the cultural incompetence of some of the healthcare workers
mm-hmm.
and the unconscious bias that exists amongst healthcare workers. So that's what agencies can do. Put their money where their mouth is and do a true community-based partnership for these hard-hit communities and let the community tell you what to do instead of supposing that because, you know, you are the government or, you know, a public health official, you know best, because history will tell you that they've been wrong.
Right, agreed. And that really would be a great idea. I mean, I know I did recently hear about how CVS Health was expanding their COVID vaccination access.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, will help a lot of communities who mm-hmm. don't have access. But again, like you mentioned, there's...
Or even, you know, put a healthcare team on a mobile van or bus and drive it into that community.
Right.
Because a lot of these people will not leave their community. They feel safe in their community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, brown and black America, you know, we're not, sometimes we're just simply not safe outside of our communities. That's the truth.
Right.
You know, the recent rise in you know, deaths, you know, of brown and black people at the hand of law enforcement proved that to us.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, it has been the case.
Right. But to go to the next question that I had for you, it was also mentioned that you participate in the NIH All of Us Research Program, which you mentioned.
Yes.
Data collected earlier before. Can you explain what this program is and maybe share some examples of how the program has yes. provided data or solutions toward, you know, so, racial equities?
Yeah. The National Black Nurses Association is a national partner with the All of Us Research Initiative, which is a project by the National Institute of Health to enroll 1 million people in a long-term research project that really is looking at how do we discover, how do we enhance all of those things about medical treatment for the future. And it's been a wonderful initiative because they really want to make sure that they enroll the largest and most diverse cohort of research participants in this study, because only by doing so can we ensure that any of their precision medicine, you know, things that come out of this, the new discoveries and innovations in healthcare are really going to be not only applicable, but also able to be used in every single population. giving access to everyone. So the database that's being created is going to be even a public open access database.
Okay.
That communities can use this data to design their own programs, to do their own inquiry. Even research teams from historically Black universities and colleges, Hispanic serving institutions, Native American institutions will also have access to this data. And that's something that, you know, hasn't always happened in these large, you know, federally funded, you know, projects in the past. So again, we are helping, we meaning MBNA, we're helping to educate the communities in which we live, work, and play about the importance of the research project to encourage enrollment. I myself am enrolled in the project. I am a participant. I put my money where my mouth is. And I really have enjoyed, you know, the questionnaires that they're asking. They've initiated genetic testing to look at, you know, the genetic predisposition for disease. So I'm looking forward to getting that report on myself to see what's going on, because, you know, while I know a lot about my mother's history and my mother's family, I don't know a lot about my father's. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping it will give me some answers, some insight into my own health. And again, it is a publicly funded project. So you know, NIH is funded by your research dollars. So if you haven't heard about it, you know, I would suggest all of you go to allofus.org and you can find out more information about it. There's videos about it, testimonials from people who've enrolled, and you can find out how to even enroll yourself. And what this is a bridge to research participation. And, you know, it has had overlap into, you know, increasing participation, not only in all of us, but even early on in the COVID-19 vaccine trials.
Okay.
Because we faced the same issues with the historic under enrollment of people of color in research projects such as all of us. But they really are part of our solution for the future.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. It sounds like a very interesting and very fun program, just to, you know, have all the information that at your fingertips, but also, yeah, you know, being a part of that. That's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Now, that's actually all I had for you, but I don't know if there's anything else that maybe you'd like to share that I did not touch on.
So I wanted to share one other really specific thing about the healthcare workers that we began to talk about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the sort of long-term problem that is created by the lack of diversity amongst healthcare providers in this country. And I'll use nursing as an exemplar because I am a nurse. So, you know, the nursing profession is still currently 90% women and upwards of 80% white. I myself am a Black Latino male. I am an oddity within this profession. I'm also a doctorally prepared nurse, which is also a very small number. And, you know, nursing being the largest of the healthcare professions, no one in our healthcare system touches patients' lives more than nurses. And our society is growing ever more racially and ethnically diverse. By 2050, we will be a racially and ethnically majority nation. Nursing has a social contract, a moral and ethical obligation to prepare a nursing healthcare workforce that will mirror the future projected population of this country. Anything else that nursing does,
mm-hmm,
is derelict of that responsibility. And I challenge not only my nursing colleagues to begin to really address this issue about who we are preparing as healthcare workers, because you find similar disparities amongst physicians, amongst dentists, and all other forms of healthcare practitioners. we must do better. We can do better.
Wonderful, thank you. And like you said, you know, in 2050, it's gonna completely flip the script, and that just sounds like a very exciting time. You know, it's very much well-deserved, and again, something to celebrate. So
absolutely.
Thank you again for your time. I appreciate, you know, you informing me more. I definitely feel a lot more, my brain has been fed and I'm happy. So thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for yours. And remember, all of us, you know, plug it right into Google, all of us, and follow us at mbna.org. You can find information about our Hill Day, which will be when this airs, and you can even register for free to join us.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.